David, let me introduce you. You're David. You're from the United States, but you're originally from Europe. I won't say which part of Europe, but you're living in the Philippines now. And
Right.
your name is David. You're from the United States, but you're from Europe. And I don't want to say which country, so I don't identify you. And also, Winston Wu, everyone knows him from happierabroad.com. Welcome aboard, guys.
Pleasure, Steve. Great to be here.
Pleasure. Great to be here. Okay.
Ladies Love is my advisor, by the way.
Okay.
David is, yeah, okay, fine. All right, guys.
Or David, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's start this
Either one.
again. So we don't have to, because I'm going to just have to cut this in pieces, okay? I got on the phone with me. Okay, today's date is June 23rd, 2010, about 3:25 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I've got with me on the phone David from the United States. He's originally from Europe. I won't say which part of Europe, but you can maybe guess his accent. I don't know. And he lives in the Philippines.
Maybe you won't.
And I got another gentleman. He's very popular. His name is Winston Wu from happierabroad.com. And we're having a three-way conversation. And he's actually in Taiwan right now. I'm in Cleveland, Ohio. And you, David, are in the Philippines. Oh, isn't this technology just so awesome? It's just great.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
The internet connects us all.
let me talk to David first. David, in a few, in a maybe in a couple paragraphs, explain why the average guy who's sick of the dating scene should come to the Philippines, and what's wrong with the dating scene in America? I mean, you have a better definition.
Well, the thing is, the problem in the States is threefold or fourfold. Okay, the main thing is that there are more single young men, good-looking single young men, than there are good-looking single young women. That's the first thing. So, a lot of guys who are not, in the dating scene, they're not in it simply because there are more single young girl. I mean, there are more single young guys than girls. That's the first reason. The second reason is the United States is a rich country. I mean, it's rich, and it's got a philosophy whereby it teaches people to reach for the stars and achieve success, and actually look for the best there is. So women look for the best there is in the United States, and that means guys who are super good looking, guys that are winners or making big money, because the United States is so expensive to live in.
Right.
Naturally, women, you can un you could understand they want guys that are successful.
No, David, I'm sorry. I don't understand it. I make no pretense to understand. I don't even care, but continue.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, that's how they've been conditioned. They've been conditioned to reach, for the best job, the best guy, the best car, the best everything. And this is the second reason. The third reason is probably because of the sexual revolution in the 1960s, whose intention was actually to liberate the sexes and to make it easier for people to meet each other, to have sex. But the unintended consequence of that whole thing was that the guys that were super good looking with the best possible personalities, who were like the tallest, the most handsome, the richest, they got 80% of the girls. That's the 20-80 rule. And the other guys, they just basically were left holding the bag.
Yeah, boy, this is the thing
Yeah.
get for liberating the sex.
Yeah. So, and then, it got worse and worse, basically. And then also, you have feminism, which also probably, the advent of feminism was there because women wanted to be liberated and be equal to men, but it went too far, whereby, instead of being equal to men, they're now trying to be superior to men, or, act like men. They weren't supposed to be equal, but still women, but instead they became equal or even superior and manlike. So if you want to be liked by someone who is strong and manlike, you have to become almost female-like. You have to become a like girl-like, really kind of, whining, whinging, weak person, so that manlike creature wouldn't harm you. You know, so those things made it very hard for an average guy, just or even like, you know, average to good-looking guy to find a date, a decent date. Right. Those are the factors that make it hard. Now, if you go to a lot of other countries, you know, people say, well, go abroad. I mean, abroad is a big place. Where abroad? You go to Canada, that's abroad. You know, you go to Australia, that's also abroad. But there are countries in the world, like, for example, the Philippines, Colombia, Costa Rica, parts of Eastern Europe, you know, the further east, the better, where the situation is reverse. Okay. You have countries where there are more good-looking young women than there are good-looking young men. Okay, that's the first thing. And the second thing is that they're not rich. I'm not saying that they're poor or starving. Everything looks okay. I mean, there are nice restaurants everywhere. People drive nice cars and all that. But their income level is lower. So, and also, they don't have a philosophy like the American type philosophy that you have to reach for the stars and expect the best and that you deserve the best. And they don't have those philosophies. They have a philosophy of just, you know, just live a normal life, you know, find a normal guy and, you know, just start a normal family. Also, feminism was never introduced to those countries. And they were taught to be women. Okay, it doesn't mean that they were taught to be inferior to men. Probably they were taught to be equal to men in some ways, and a lot of them occupied positions of importance, but they weren't taught to act like men. That's, you know, in their culture, that's disgusting. It's like they would probably think, their society would probably think that they're a lesbian if they acted that way. So, you know, and so they dress well. They don't like to dress in these, you know, jeans and sneakers and all that. They like to dress well in dresses because that's what a woman is supposed to wear. A man does not wear a dress. A woman does. I mean, yes, sometimes they wear jeans, you know, probably because it's the fashion. They don't treat men with deference, but they treat them with respect as an equal. And they expect men to take a traditional role, take on a traditional role, which is to be a provider, to be a defender of the woman and the child that he'll have. In a lot of those countries, there are lots of women who are virgins. They're virgins. They don't have sex with men before they get married. I'm not saying all of them are, but there's a huge number of them, you know, a huge percentage of those women who are virgins. We're talking like in some places up to like 85%. In some places it's like 60%, you know, 70%. Some places, you know, like in the countryside, that would be like close to 90%. Now there are some that went astray and they had boyfriends and stuff, but they wouldn't have, you know, like 7, 8, 9 boyfriends. Maybe they've had one. They made a mistake. They listened to his promises. They believed his promises. And then the guy just took off. So they're left with a kid or they're no longer virgins. And that makes them less marriageable because a lot of guys that have good jobs and good cars and, you know, that have finished university, they would say things like, well, you know, I've been working hard. I've been studying hard. So now I want a wife, you know, I want a woman that I love. And here is a woman that had given herself to a guy that didn't work as hard. You know, she couldn't wait, okay? She gave herself to a guy who basically left her. So in a lot of those countries, that's like a bargaining chip for a girl to get married. You know, I'll be a virgin so that I could be that, you know, the best woman for that man. So that is the thing that makes a lot of those countries different. Now, that's basically why if guys go to those places, like even like average-looking American guys, they go to those places, they'll plug into a different matrix, and they'll be in a different marketplace, because I think that love is also a commodity, believe it or not. You know, it's not a physical commodity, but it's kind of like an abstract, emotional, spiritual commodity. And that guy will be much more marketable there. And how marketable? I would say that, you know, a guy would arrive in a place like that, a foreigner, an American guy, and he would go to, you know, just regular places, department store, you know, shops, restaurants and all this. And there are like young ladies working there and they look good and they're smiling at that guy. They're not arrogant or anything. And, you know, if a guy gives them a number and says, hey, you know, you want to go out to dinner, in like 60% of cases, he would hear, yes, let's go. Let's go to dinner. I'll wait for you. When can we meet? Where? And, you know, and then this guy, he just starts dating. Basically, he starts dating all these beautiful young women and relationships start and they progress. And, you know, and that guy has a normal social life, romantic life of a healthy young man. So that's basically it. And then, you know, relationships progress from there as much as the guy wants. You know, and if the guy calls the girl and says, okay, you want to meet and have dinner? Yeah, let's go and let's meet and have dinner. And do you want to go and, you know, go to the movies? Yeah, let's go to the movies and stuff. And then as far as the guy takes that girl, that's as far as she goes. Okay, so that's my say.
And also don't forget the cliquishness in the in America, remember? And
yeah.
The
yeah, okay. Here's another
isolation
thing.
Mentality, yeah.
Yeah, Americans are friendly within a group, but there is this inherent fear of strangers, you know, people you don't know. You know, so that's why a lot of people try and get into cliques when they're in college, when they're in high school, get to know people within a group. I remember I went to school in New York, and I was attending an art class there, and it took like 3 months for people to start talking to each other and establish a relationship with each other, you know, a friendly relationship. Everyone was absorbed in his work. And I understand it was an art class, but like, you know, after the class, you know, they probably want to hang out with some of the people, have coffee, but people wouldn't do that probably because they were busy. But also there was very little eye contact. Now, I'm not saying that that makes people unfriendly, you know, obviously people are friendly on the inside, but they were probably taught to be independent and cautious, you know, and cautious of other people and get to know people first. And it's the same in Canada, in the English-speaking part of Canada. It's kind of similar. So I'm just saying that's how the culture is. Now, probably in a place like Japan, it would be even harder than in the States, you know, or there are places like Sweden where probably it would take a year to get to know people. I've never been there, but that's what I've heard. But I'm just saying on the scale of friendliness to a person you don't know, America doesn't rank that high. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, so, but that's, you know, that's again, you know, a lot of the things we're saying here, maybe me or Winston, these are subjective things. They're observations. Maybe other people don't have those experiences. And, you know, I'm just saying that's basically my experience. When I went to the States, I was 17, 18 years old. And I immediately noticed that, but again, I had a different point of reference because in the country where I grew up, people were not as paranoid of strangers. You know, you could go to the beach and there are girls sitting around and you could start a conversation and some of them would tell you to go fly a kite and some would say, you know, yeah, you know, I'm from here and there, and you could go and maybe talk to about four or five different girls and probably walk off with a date, a phone number, an address. And that whole thing worked. I mean, it was just like a mechanism that would work. And but it didn't work in the States. You're not supposed to go to the beach and talk to people you don't know. That's freakish. That's not important. I mean, that, yeah. You just don't do that. Yeah. But, you know, that's not the thing is, you know, the ironic thing, you know, again, I'm not trying to run down America or anything. I'm just trying to state the fact that this is how things are. Now, there are people there are guys who are like super duper good looking, You know, there are guys that are like incredibly good looking and they're tall, they look like movie stars. Maybe those guys could break that eyes barrier. But for an average Joe, an average person, that's not that easy. And I saw a lot of lonely guys hanging out, you know, without girls. And I would see girls that were not so good looking. They were pretty, you know, average to like very not good looking, you know, and, you know, overweight, with like really good looking guys. And that really shocked me, because that would not happen where I came from originally. You would not see that. You know, if a girl was fat and not attractive by any standard, she'd never find a guy.
I was going to say, just let me get a word in here. Let me ask a question. When you run into American expats in the Philippines, especially guys that move there because of the women issue, can all the guys have a conversation and not feel ashamed to agree that there's a problem with American dating scene? Because American if you talk to the average American guy and a group of other guys, they're just like, I don't know what your problem is, dude. I don't have that problem. And they're all it's crazy.
Well, the thing is, you know, this is why a lot of them are in the Philippines in the first place. They're, you know, it's just no one will talk about, because, you know, when you're in a group of expats, guys from the States, you know, and they're sitting around, like 99.9% of those guys would have a local girlfriend or a local wife. Now, they would try and justify to each other why they have one, but they could. But the thing is, you know, I haven't known even one who is living here with an American wife. And there are some, I'm sure, you know, these are like business executives, you know, guys that work for IBM or Dell or one of those, you know, they probably get transferred on an expat package with their families, and they bring their American wives with them. And then there were some soldiers, you know, guys, soldiers, airmen, they got transferred here, and they were staying with American wives, you know, generals or whoever. But it's also happened that they quickly I exchange them for the local the local goods, so to speak. I mean, the local females, you know, and they ship their wives home, or, you know, they ended up in divorce. Some guys, you know, they came out here and they fell in love with the local women, they went back home, they got divorced, and they came back, they fell for the local girls. I mean, and that happened all the time.
I mean, what do you expect?
Yeah.
If women can do that to men in America, if women can basically have their luck of the pick of the litter, why can't we? Why is looking out, you know, people, this is what pisses me off about American women. They say, oh, you just want to go overseas because you just want to get laid, okay? But it's okay for women to have ulterior motives. Like, they can have it. It's okay for them to use all the system to their advantage. But when we want to do it, it's not okay. It's just, there's such an anti-male sentiment in this country.
And a double standard, yeah.
Big time. Say, why don't you give your two cents in, Winston, about what has he said? Anything you disagree with so far, David?
Oh no, I agree.
No, go ahead.
Are you asking me?
Yeah,
I would agree with pretty much everything he said, and I would add that, you know, I don't know if it's your experience, David, but in my experience, most countries are pretty open in that people talk to strangers and you can meet girls easily. Because in Western countries like America or Canada, young women tend to be more stuck up and standoffish and paranoid of strangers. So you don't really meet them unless it's through your friends or through your work or your school. So you can only meet them through your cliques usually. And so that really limits your pool. So the average guy in America, I mean, if he doesn't have a wife, then he can only meet girls through his friends or through certain cliques or organizations. And so that severely limits his choices to just a small handful. And if there's no girls in his clique, in his social clique, then he's pretty much out of luck. So it's kind of like a very limited dead end. Whereas if you go to a country that's very open and friendly and inclusive, like the Philippines, for instance, where David is now, it's so easy to meet girls that you can meet them every day, get numbers every day, and then the guy has so many choices. And when you have so many choices, it expands your dating range a lot. Exponentially.
Hey, I have something else to say that I believe it does. When you know that you have many options, you are more apt to settle for one woman than you are if you don't have any options. Because what I see in America today is a scenario where a guy will screw his best friend's wife just because he's so desperate. And I see that once you know you have options, such as the Philippines, you pretty much don't have to feel desperate.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, and I mean, the beauty of that is indescribable. I mean when you're desperate in America, or you're living a life of quiet desperation, I mean, it's a terrible thing because you're suffering on the inside. You want to be validated, and that's – I mean, getting girls is not just about getting girls. I mean, a guy wants to feel validated, and you don't get that in America. A guy feels like half a man or something. But when a lot of girls want you and you have a lot of female connections or even friends and they treat you really good and with a warm, positive vibe, I mean, you really feel validated and you wake up every day feeling good about yourself. You feel confident.
It's like you
and that's amazing. That's better than anything you can describe. I mean, it's like a salvation to your soul.
I know. You know, I was just telling David, I was talking to Winston about an hour ago. I said, I'm afraid that if I go to a place like the Philippines, I'm going to start crying and saying, where have I been all my life? Because it's almost like as if you could very easily find yourself in a situation where you cannot believe how different these people are. I mean, compared to America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, David.
Yeah, go ahead, David.
Well, the thing is, you know, that there are certain things like people constantly, you know, people that come to the Philippines, they criticize it because, you know, but people criticize it's, you know, it's human nature to complain and all this. And, you know, the country has its own problems. It's a developing country and it's got its own set of obstacles and challenges and all that you need to overcome. On the other hand, people tend to overlook a lot of things. Like one of the things here in the Philippines is that it's generally a very happy society. People are happy here. No matter what happens, you know, they're smiling and they're genuinely happy. They've learned to be happy, probably because it's a tropical country with great weather and they have close family ties. They have lots of friends. They're never alone. They're always connected. There is a concept of kapwa. Kapwa means kind of like a, you know, society or community, and everyone is part of it. And when foreigners come here, you also become part of this community. Like another thing here in the Philippines is that you have almost, I want to use the word almost, no racial discrimination. Okay, you don't have this racial thing like you have in the States. For example, this country has 170 different ethnic groups, and people, you know, the people range from like very black, almost African-looking people to very white people, and then in between you have this huge number of Malay-looking people that look like, you know, people in Hawaii, something like that. And there's very little emphasis on race as you have in the States. You know, like a Filipino is a Filipino, and then any person who is a citizen of the Philippines is a Filipino. Now, and then you are basically identified by the language you speak. Okay, this country has, I don't know what, over 100 different languages. So you're basically identified by the language you speak. So because there's so little racial dislike, I mean, yeah, it may happen, but it's minimal. People mingle. They normally mingle with others. And if you learn the language here, you'll integrate yourself almost like 90 or 95%, regardless of your skin color, regardless of, you know, what you are and who you are and where you come from and things like that. Of course, it's important that you have money. Not a lot of money, but just enough money to support yourself. You know, if you have like $2,000 here, you are basically set for life. You could live on $500 here a month, but that's not very comfortable. But if you have like an average income, if you could make money online, you know, like you be a writer or something. When you live here, this poison of racism that exists in the States, it's almost non-existent here. I'm not saying
this is a different matrix. I mean, let me ask you, David. The United States obviously is a living hell when it comes to socialization and things.
Yeah.
Is this like walking into a different matrix when you get to the Philippines?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So in other words, you don't feel intimidated because in this country, just the fear of walking up to a woman you don't know could get you in legal trouble. It's like, you're telling me that over there, it's just like a...
No, you can't. I mean, for example, you tell a girl that she's got a beautiful figure. I mean, nice figure, you know. She'll take it as a compliment. She'll start smiling and blushing. You could even say that in an office to a lady. And several times I've asked different ladies, okay, would you feel hurt? She says, on the contrary, I'd love it. You know, I love being complimented. She'll be beaming with a smile, walking around with this big smile. And, you know, because a guy complimented her. Now, of course, you know, if you start pawing her and groping her, that's a different story. But if you say, you know what, you look great today. You know, you've got a beautiful face. And you have this incredibly beautiful figure, you know, you could tell her that. And the girl will just lap it up, you know, and a woman will lap it up. Whereas, you know, and I guess it used to be like that in the States, maybe way back in the 1930s, but it's no longer the case. You could get sued for sexual harassment. If it's a person that you know that you know well, then yeah, I guess so. But here, you could say that. There's no problem.
Yeah, you're not considered a creep if you flirt with girls and compliment them. I mean, none of them ever react badly. So even a guy that's really shy normally will be more comfortable and outgoing in a country like the Philippines or like in Russia, for example, where I spent a year or two, where the girls love receiving compliments and it's flattering and you know, and that's how feminine girls are. So even you can take the shyest guy in America and then he'll be very comfortable and confident and open with the girls because when they're like that, it just brings out the best in you. And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you were
the thing is, yeah, you know, I'll tell you one thing in the States, right? On, you know, every country has some kind of discrimination, you know, discrimination, racial discrimination, class discrimination. Like here in the Philippines, it's primarily how much money you have. And sometimes, you know, in some provinces, it's what family you come from, what your last name is. But that's about jobs and political life, but not about social life. And in social circumstances, you know, you are allowed to mingle with most people, regardless of who you are and what you are, and people will be polite. In the States, you know, one of the things in the States, because of this racism, it's such a big deal to date people across the race lines, you know, and it's like, I am Caucasian. I am proud to be an Asian American. You know, I'm Hispanic. You know, it's like, it's big deal. Whereas if you start saying things like that here, people won't relate to that. They can't understand that. You know, like, for example, in the States, you know, you go to, I remember I was in New York, I was studying in New York, and I'd go to this college, you know, on certain occasions, and then you'd go to a college cafeteria, and it's like, you know, South African apartheid. You know, you have these groups of people, you know, the Hispanics are sitting with the Hispanics, the whites are with the whites, the blacks are apart. And then, you know, when people start crossing those lines, it's always big deal, always. It's like, and people emphasize it. I'm not prejudiced. Yeah, let's mingle. I have a wife or I have a girlfriend who is Chinese. I mean, it's always being emphasized, you know, whether it positively as an achievement of some kind or negatively, or, you know, I'm not racist. It's a factor. It's a big factor in dating and socializing with people. When you meet the person, when you meet an Asian person in the States, and that's an Asian American, not a foreign student, or you know, an immigrant that has been in the States for a long time, then when you meet that person immediately, there's kind of like this tingling you see in his eyes, this kind of like a flicker in his eyes that he's trying to size you up in terms of race and put you in a category. Here comes a white guy. Oh, there is a black guy. You know what I'm saying? There are these, you know, so that is a big thing, you know. The same thing happens when you start dating black girls. You know, like, for example, I had a girlfriend who was a black girl from Panama for a while. And we would go out and walk around in New York, and she came from a Spanish-speaking society, and she was pitch black, coal black. And we would walk down the streets, and, you know, you'd have black guys and black women looking at us funny. It's like it was something out of the ordinary. So people that go to the States because they think that the United States is superior economically, which it is, it's superior technologically, which it is, they think that social it's also superior. So after a few years, 10 years, maybe a decade, people start following these racial very segregating lines. You know, they start following these rules, racial rules. And when the next generation is born, you have people saying, I only date, you know, girls saying, I only date Asian men. Or, you know, things like that. It's like ridiculous, you know. So for someone who comes from a country where race is not big deal, it becomes another obstacle in terms of meeting people. Again, I'm not saying that all people are like that. I'm not saying that in other countries there's no racism. I'm just saying that the intensity of it, the frequency with which it occurs, is enormously greater in the United States than in some other places that I've been to. Like here in the Philippines, it's no big deal. You have people here that are children of the GIs, and they're black, totally black. You know, they look like black Americans. They speak the Philippine language, and they're accepted as Filipinos, as just Filipinos in their society. Whereas in the States, they would be hyphenated, you know, and they would be probably called a Filipino Afro-American. Like, there is this necessity to, you know, to slap this label upon a person, like it's, you know, it's a TV or it's an air conditioner or it's like something that needs to be described with a simple label based on race. That is, you know, that is very, very sickening, and I don't like it. I hate it. You know, I don't like to, you know, like, for example, you go to a place in New York and there are Puerto Ricans working there. You start speaking Spanish to them, and they answer in English, and they start flashing their angry eyes at you. How dare you? Are you making fun of us? And then, you know, you have apartheid, social apartheid, that is basically, maybe, I don't know if it's as bad as in South Africa, maybe it's even worse. But the thing is, in contrast to that, you have the civil rights, and you have very strong laws at work. That will protect you from this racial discrimination, especially if you're a person of color. You know, you'll be protected. But just the whole awareness of that segregation, of that taxonomy, that way of classifying people, it makes you kind of queasy and uncomfortable inside. But people have learned to live with it, to toughen themselves up, you know.
It creates tension, too, yeah.
It creates a lot of tension. So when you're a person that doesn't want to subscribe to this taxonomy, to this system, like, you know, let's look at President Obama. You know, he had to be declared a black man, a black American, a black president. Why not just call him an American? Or let's say a Kenyan American. No, you can't. You have to put a label. You have to classify them, stick them into a category, you know. And a lot of people, they wouldn't do it. Like, you know, for example, I'm not saying there's no racial problem in a lot of other countries, but people would be just what they are. Now, why am I'm not really going off on the tangent, but I'm just saying, you are supposed to be with your own people socially. And if you deviate from that, you will encounter difficulties. You're a person of another race. That will be an additional factor. Now, where I am in, you know, the place where I'm in right now, it's people will notice that you are of a different color, you're a foreigner, and people will probably make a comment, but it's no big deal because they don't have this serious and very intense racial awareness that people have in the States. Okay? So, right to you, Winston.
Well, yeah, I agree with that, and And, you know, when you're a minority, I mean, I'm Asian, for instance, I mean, you get treated differently. I mean, you're expected to only hang out with other Asians. And in America especially, a lot of white girls are not attracted to Asians. And even a lot of Asian girls are not attracted to Asians because they prefer white guys. So when you're a minority in America, it even makes it even more difficult, the dating and the social scene. And but I think Steve was asking earlier if he went to the Philippines, would he say, "My God, where have I been all this time?" I mean, didn't you feel that way the first time you went to the Philippines, Lady Slav?
Yeah. I loved it. I loved it when I first arrived, you know, and it was like the first thing you notice is how modest the people are. You don't have these, you know, like these arrogant people walking down the street, each one is trying to look self-important. You know, people are just humble and they're just living their own lives, and they have these very mild manners. And when you arrive, you know, you just become part of the community here. You just, you know, fit in. You know, you could go, come and go, and you know, you just feel part of it. It's great. You don't feel disconnected from other people, even though I look totally different from them. You know, I mean, I'm totally, my face, my skin color, my hair is just totally different, but you just become part of it. And what I'm saying, then you have, like, I remember first time I was in Cebu, which is a city in central Philippines. It's a city of about 1 million people, maybe 600 to 1 million people. And when I first arrived there, you know, you just go to all these different places and girls are checking you out, laughing, smiling, giggling when they see you, telling you you're handsome, they have a wife, asking you questions. Once, you know, I even walked down the street and these girls, you know, they were coming from college, you know, these Navy girls, I don't know, they were 20 years old, 19, 20 years old. They formed a human chain and they wouldn't let me through. You know, that was like so funny. And then I got on this bus, not a bus, they have these kind of like pickup trucks with a shell, and I got on it, and there were all these college girls coming in, and they looked at me, you know, they were staring and giggling, and then one of them said, "Do you have a wife?" And I said, "No," and then she pointed to the other girls with her hand and said, "Well, choose one." That was great, you know, and then you walk down the streets and the girls start whistling at you. You know, there are catcalls coming from girls. And that really, that boosts your ego, you know. And after a while, you know.
David, it makes you feel like you're a rock star on tour.
I didn't feel that I was a rock star. I felt that I was being appreciated. You know, that I was being appreciated for being who I am, I was. And then, you know, for example, there was a case, and I was standing in line. First time I went to a department store, I was standing in line, and then there were these cashier girls. They were cashiers, and they just stopped working, and they were looking at me, and they were whispering something to each other. And I asked them, "Well, what are you saying?" And they're saying, "We're saying that you're very handsome." And, you know, and I said, "What's so handsome about me?" And he said, "Well, maybe that's your tantalizing eyes." And it was nice to hear. And, you know, we were all laughing and smiling. Then, you know, I met this other girl, and she was staying at this hotel. She was a floor manager there. She was the floor manager. And once, you know, I just plucked up my courage, and I said, you know, "Hey, you want to go out? You want to go to the movies?" And the response was, "Yeah, let's go out. Let's go." And we went to the beach and the movies, and we almost became a boyfriend and girlfriend, but it was just so easy, you know, and we were at the movies and eating out, and we just became so close to each other and exchanged a lot of information, and we're still friends. She got married to another guy, a British guy, but we're still very good friends, and sometimes she writes to me about the times we've spent together. It never really became a romance, but it was just pleasant, and it was just this great friendship that we formed. And she was not arrogant. She was not from a poor family either. She comes from an educated family. They own land, they own houses and all that. So it was just easy to meet people. So that's it. Over to you, Winston. Over to you.
Well, I was just going to say, and when I read your story about the first time you went to the Philippines, you said that after a few weeks, it you looked in the mirror and then you saw a happier face, like years of pain were erased. And
right, yeah.
That's really significant. I mean, that's really touching and significant. And I experienced the same thing, too. I mean, the first time I went to Russia, it was so surreal how easy it was to meet girls there that you just feel like this can't be true. It must be a dream. But the amazing thing that is that it is true. It's real. But you never imagine that it could be. I mean, so easy and natural to just meet a girl and you know, just like in the movies when a guy and a girl meet and everything just flows from there. Except this is in real life and not in the movies. And that's amazing. Steve?
Sorry, I wanted to throw something in. Maybe going over there is not a dream. Maybe that's reality, and this is a goddamn nightmare we're living in.
Oh, no, that's a good point. Yeah. You're in a social hell nightmare. I mean, in the States.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that right. I don't advocate. You know, the thing is, I was trying to explain the other day that we're living in the age of globalism, and those people that think that living in only one country is the proper thing to do are a bit behind times. You know, like, for example, I didn't really emigrate. I didn't leave the United States. You know, I go there all the time. But the thing is, you know, what we all need to do is combine the United States with another country or with two more countries to have a complete life. It's not different from, let's say, having a house in Los Angeles, but it's so crowded and there's a lot of crime. And then you have another house in a totally different environment, like Palm Springs, or you have a place in Colorado, or you have a place in Montana somewhere where it's, you know, it's a whole different environment. The people are different. You know, there's more greenery. So what I'm saying, a lot of people who are successful, they prefer to live in several places. So no one will say to someone that because he's moving out of Los Angeles or he has a house in Los Angeles and then the one in Montana, that person is not a patriot, that person is a traitor, that he is a wacko, that, you know, he can't find the environment he wants in Los Angeles. You know, people will just take it in stride. Well, you know, that's great. You know, a lot of people move. They leave L.A. They go to Seattle to find work, you know. And it's not seen as them being losers. You know, they're just normal people and are looking for opportunities. So I do the same, but on a global scale, and I think all people should do the same. When there is very little opportunity, you know, you just go to a place where there is more opportunity.
You know what? It is really weird because you're absolutely – that's a good point there is that people will never make fun of you when you say, well, I'm going to move to this state because there's better opportunities. They'll never say, oh, you're just a loser. But they'll say that about finding a good woman. Why is it considered a loser for just wanting to find something that is biologically natural as eating?
Because they're being provincial. I really, you know, I have no other say. Basically, it's provincialism and it's nationalism. You know, they're just being overly nationalistic.
Another thing that a lot of these people will do, especially women, when they see a struggle in the dating scene, they know they're doing this purposely to piss you off. They'll say, "Why don't you just be gay?" And it's like adding insult to injury. And what they're doing is they know that they really don't want you to be that either, but they're trying to make you feel worse than you already are by telling you, "Well, you ought to just be gay." Can you imagine how cruel American women can be?
Yeah, it's cruel. It's cruel. But the thing is, you know, I don't know. You know, I'd never become gay. But again, those people are not travelers. They don't have a global consciousness. They're not people that see themselves as citizens of the world, living on this planet Earth and moving freely about the planet. They see themselves as, you know, Americans, and, you know, everything is great in America. And that was true maybe 50, 60 years ago, that was the case. But, you know, the world is changing. We're now living in a global community. People are going from the States to other countries. People are from other countries, people are coming to the States. There's this movement. People travel around looking for different opportunities, you know. Now, let's say there's an American woman who goes to France, let's say if she goes to Paris or London, no one will say that she's a loser if she's looking for, let's say, an intellectual Brit to marry, or, you know, a romantic Frenchman to marry. You know, like, no one will say that that woman is a loser. Or, you know, she goes to Milan, of all places, and she wants to live there, and, you know, she likes the Italian art and Italian food. No one will tell her, hey, you loser, you know, what's wrong with America? You know, people will probably say, oh, wow, Milan, oh, Paris, how romantic. They'll probably say something like that. You know, but, you know, they won't. But if you go to, let's say, a place that has, that is either unknown, you know, people will make a wry face. You know, they'll just crunch up their features. You're going where? People are starving there, you know. So we have, so it's not only not, you know, it's not only because people are nationalistic, they also have a very limited world view. Now, let's say you go to Toronto, Canada, you know, you're going to work in Canada, and you will say, hey, you know, I'm going to Canada, I'm going to find me a nice Canuck girl. Do you think Americans will object to that? Do you think they'll say, what's good with, well, what's wrong with good old American women? Why do you need a Canuck? I mean, it's unheard of, right? So I'm just saying, it doesn't only extend to all these, you know, I mean, it's not only, it doesn't only extend around the United States, it also includes foreign countries. Like, you know, let's say you're going to Australia, you're going there, you're saying, you know, I've heard Aussie women are better. And those guys will probably say, hey, that's cool, because they know what Australia is.
Yeah, they all speak English. We almost have this this attitude in English, but I want to also say that I know it's a little bit off the subject, but in Canada, the dating scene probably, this is something I was saying to Winston. I don't know if I just said it earlier, but I just, it's kind of sad that we have a thing called, we have a definition called the dating scene, because we don't socialize, so we have to have a separate category for it. Whereas in other countries, they just, like the Philippines, they just socialize, and there really is no, quote, dating scene, because people don't date, they just hang out, you know?
Yeah, they hang out. They hang out.
Yeah.
And another thing here is that local guys, you know, I don't mean to disparage local guys, but in a society like this one, people have big families. So, if, you know, and salaries aren't that great. So if you're here and if you're a man, you have a responsibility towards your brother, your sister, your uncle, your aunt, you know, so you're not supporting, but helping them all. So you don't really have a lot of disposable income to, like, invite girls out to dinner, not through the fault of your own and not even because you're poor, but all this money goes into this common pot, you know, this family pot, you know, and then it's like a family coffer to help, you know, your first priority is to help your brother. So a lot of girls don't meet guys that actually have that cash. We're not talking about rich guys that have the cash to buy them a Mercedes-Benz or a house, but just to take them out to the beach. You know, these girls work very hard, and they're also supporting their families. So when you come and you invite a girl, let's go to the movies, let's go to the beach, you know, let's go out, a lot of them will jump at that chance. You know, they will jump at the chance to go out. And it doesn't mean you're going to end up in the sack after that. They'll probably invite, you know, it's a custom here to invite someone else, you know, to go with them. It's probably going to cost you $40 to take, you know, even less, maybe $30 to take maybe two or three young females, you know, maybe the girl that you want to date and her sister and maybe a friend, to go to the beach, to hang out there, to eat out, you know, to have a little barbecue, have some drinks, and then go back home. And, you know, things like that, it's appreciated, whereas, you know, that money will buy you a date in the States with a woman, and all you'll get will be a peck on the cheek. You know, you won't really get that much.
Let me stop you there, David. I don't even think it'll even get that far. If a girl doesn't find you attractive in America, she wants nothing to do with you. I don't even think anymore you even get dates. With the myth of
right.
But for example, a lot of times guys will say women just want free dinner. If a woman doesn't find you attractive, she ain't going to even accept a free dinner from you. She don't want to be seen within a 50-foot or 100-foot radius of you.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
And that's because there's so many attractive guys. And another thing, you know, a lot of these guys, they diet, they exercise to make themselves attractive to these women. But it's kind of like a will-o'-the-wisp, you know. They pump up their muscles, you know, they try and get still a better job, you know, another job and make more money. In some ways, it's kind of like a carrot on a stick, you know what I'm saying? But the thing is, a lot of them don't get that woman, you know, and they're still trying and trying and trying. But the main mistake is that they're living in one country. They don't add other countries to it. And they can't travel because they probably, they have mortgages and they have a group of friends, a support group. And within their group, you know, the realities of America are clear and the rules are clear. So they probably assume that America is probably the only place in the world. And they've been taught that. You know, over to you, Winston.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And what Steve says is true. And I mean, you're. I mean, if she's not attracted to you, or you know, you're not the best of the best, then she just doesn't even want to be friends and hang out. Usually, I mean, that's my experience. So, I mean, so even just to find a good female as a friend is very difficult in the U.S. And if you complain about it, it's taboo, because if you complain in the States, you're supposed to, I mean, you're seen as a loser, and you're supposed to try to improve yourself, because there's this assumption that society is normal and that only the people that complain have the problem.
Yeah, let me add something else about that whole thing. It's about what I was saying about the attractiveness thing. And this is kind of defending American women in this one sense. We're such a paranoid culture in America that the reason why I think a lot of women refuse to flat out even say hi to you in a store is they feel that once they say hi to you, they invite you to start hitting on them. Because in other countries like the Philippines, you can say hi to a girl and not necessarily be interested in her beyond just being cordial. But we're in America, we're such a paranoid society that a woman almost is forced to ignore you, because if she has no sexual interest in you or physical interest, she's just better off. But I think most of the women do it because they're very selfish and they're not attracted to you. And like I said before, the idea of women wanting free dinners is baloney, because if they don't find you attractive, they simply won't accept.
Yeah, especially nowadays. And what you said is really true. I mean, and it's a vicious cycle, because I mean, the more they don't want to say hi to you, the more desperate guys get, and then the more they you know, behave in more creepish ways, and then the more defensive the girls get. So it's a very bad, vicious cycle. And also in the U.S., things are compartmentalized. Like, there's a time and place for everything. Like at work, you don't flirt with girls, for instance, and then when you go to a bar, you're supposed to supposedly be allowed to, but that's not always the case. But, for example, in Italy, I heard that guys are allowed to flirt with girls even when they're working. Like, if they're a waiter at a restaurant, it's still socially acceptable for them to flirt with the customers and ask the females for their phone number, for example. So they're much less, you know, stuck up about those kind of things, much less anal about it.
Another weird mood about American dating, or the culture, the social culture, is that if a guy has an average to moderately attractive woman, he's overly protective of her. He can't just see her as somebody that can flirt with anybody. It's like if you're staring at his wife or something, he almost feels like a need to protect. There's such a vicious loop. It's a no-win situation. So Winston and David, I like what you guys are doing by telling guys that there's other places, particularly the Philippines, to go to.
Yeah, I mean, we're acknowledging the reality. You know, most people are denying this reality and just saying, oh, you'll find someone someday. Just work out and join
more
clubs and stuff.
And
you'll get someone. And none of that conventional stuff, in my experience, really turns things around for anybody. I mean, it's just comforting talk for a while and pep talk. But David always tells me, you know, you should quilt your world and don't look for water in the desert, and that God doesn't necessarily give you everything all in one place. And maybe you can expand on that, David.
The thing is, you know, I feel that everything is available for everyone. Like right now, there are romance tours for women, believe it or not. You know, some people call them sex tourists, but, you know, I don't want to insult those women. You know, we have to acknowledge one thing, that in the Western world, you know, young and attractive women are basically the queens. You know, they can get anything they want. And young also means, you know, someone under 50 now. Okay, that's great. Once they get to about 53, 54, their popularity drops abruptly. And, you know, if they're divorced by that time, they can only look back nostalgically, wistfully on their old days. You know, there are some women, and actually, you know, there are romance stores for those women that actually decide to venture out of their matrix, and they go to places in the Mediterranean, they go to Jamaica, they go to Africa, believe it or not, to find guys who don't care about their age and who would be boyfriends. And they find those guys, you know, they go to these so-called poor third world countries, you know, again, another label.
But here's another about David. Here's the problem with that. It doesn't work for women, and here's why. Because I don't want to say biologically, that sounds making sound like I'm being a eugenicist, but men are not attracted to older women because they cannot produce offspring. So I don't
think
that this game of older women going to third world countries is really, in fact, a guy is more apt to marry a woman for citizenship doing it that way than the other way around. Because simply, I don't think that any guy, and this is kind of the karma. A lot of the guys who have been rejected in the dating game in America are thinking that as these women get older, they're going to be regretting the nice guys. But I will say one thing, women in their 40s today, with the advent of plastic and corrective surgeries, these women are looking good and acting like 20-year-olds, and they're childish almost. I see 45-year-old women acting like whores, and it's because they can get away with it because we have a society that now has put women so high on a pedestal it doesn't even matter their age anymore.
Well, excuse me, well, up to a point. You know, I mean, I don't think when they're 53, that's when, you know, I think at 53 – things start happening in a bad way, you know. But I'm just saying, a lot of these women, they're no longer looking for kids. And a lot of those guys in these so-called third world countries, they're not really looking for a woman to have kids with. You know, they just want companionship of a Western woman. They do find Western women with blonde hair and blue eyes extremely attractive, regardless of their age. You know, for example, we're talking about some Arab countries. Like, I was in Oman once, and there were women who were in their 50s, and they were dating guys in their 30s. Now, these Arab guys, they have children with other women, but just the exoticism of having a Western woman as one of his wives, you know, that was just, a riot. It was, you know, it was an incredible boon from heaven, you know, someone just, you know, just so exotic with blue eyes and blonde hair, even though if the woman was 53. The same goes for a lot of other Arab countries like Egypt or Morocco.
Hey,
These guys will have one because she is attractive, you know. She won't have kids, but if a guy is 35, he already has kids. He's not looking for kids. He's looking for companionship. So that's the thing. You know, so, yeah, they can produce offsprings, but so what? He has already got offsprings. He wants, you know, companionship, the intelligence, the class, and the sex that woman will provide without having to have offsprings.
Yeah, David, I was going to say, this is a question, I don't know if Winston believes in conspiracies. Do you think it's a conspiracy in the media to keep this secret shut because they don't want to change the feminism because they almost like Americans, the media in this country has been very guilty of fueling this whole feminism.
I think it's a feedback loop rather than a conspiracy. You know what I'm saying? The people don't want to hear about that. They don't want to read it. So the newspaper, like, let's say if you publish an article and you tell people that, okay, go abroad, people won't have to read it because of patriotism, because of what other people will say, because of a very distorted picture of the world that they have based on Hollywood images, because of the fact that it's so hard to travel outside of America, because, first of all, due to the fact that people have mortgages that they need to pay and very, very short vacations. And just the physical isolation of America from the rest of the world. And a very strong sense of nationalism and patriotism. So that, but I don't think that there is a boardroom somewhere where these media moguls, they meet and they say, okay, let's have a conspiracy. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. No, absolutely not. I don't think so. I think they're just responding to the ratings, to what the people will want to see. Now, one of the things that people want to see in American media is that America is great compared to other countries. That's why you have people like Yakov Smirnov that goes to the States and, and he starts, making fun of Russia, and then you have a movie like A Green Card, where this Frenchman will do anything to get a green card. Yeah, right. Like the French want to immigrate, and you have these stereotypes. The media is feeding on the stereotypes that exist. And then the stereotypes, and then the people are feeding on the media. The stereotypes are being reinforced. It's kind of like this cyclical motion, and it just keeps repeating the same thing. It's this, yeah, it's people don't feel comfortable with the things they don't know. Over to you, Winston.
Well, some people, I mean, there are some whistleblowers that claim that there is a conspiracy. For example, if you Google the name Nick Rockefeller, for example, you'll find a ton of web pages where a guy named Aaron Russo had a friend named Nick Rockefeller from the Rockefeller family, and he actually told him that the Rockefellers funded feminism and through the CIA, and there's a connection to Gloria Steinem through that. You can read all about it, but they funded feminism so that they could start taxing women in their careers rather than just men, and almost double their taxable income.
Yeah, it's
And also
opportunist, right.
to give yeah to have to give the state more control over the kids in school, so the kids, I mean the state can indoctrinate the children too. But I mean, if Nick, if I don't know if that conversation between Nicholas Rockefeller and Aaron Russo is true, but I mean there's no reason to doubt it. I mean, but if it is,
Well,
I mean
yeah.
that's a whistleblower. I mean that
Yeah.
it's a lot of
This, yeah. The thing
whistleblowers.
is, things like,
It's
you
possible,
have
and you can't
social
rule it out,
movements.
David.
Yeah, I don't discount it. But that is more like opportunism. It's just like in politics, when you have a conflict somewhere in the world that didn't start out as a conspiracy, then certain people will see opportunities in that conflict and they will feed it. They'll just fan that conflict even more. Not because that con you know, because that will feed their purpose. For example, you have a conflict in the Middle East. It's beneficial to a lot of people to keep it going.
But a lot of
But it's not, you know what I'm saying? It's a combination, okay? I'll admit that there was a conspiracy, that there were several people that sat down and said, look, that's going to play into our hands. So let's advance that. Right.
Throughout history, people have been manufacturing public perception. I mean, if you go on YouTube and look for this documentary called Century of the Self, you'll find out that in the 40s or 50s, this guy named Edward Bernays actually taught U.S. corporations how and advertisers how to manufacture public perception to make people
Hey,
want something they didn't want.
David, let me interject here. I want to say something. I know we're getting off on a different tangent. He's absolutely right. The Century of the Self, there was a Jewish guy named Edward Bernays. He was the nephew of Sigmund Freud, and he lived to be like 101 years old. He just died like a few years ago, and he was the guy that invented public opinion in this country, and the guy was a genius, and he invented the bacon and eggs thing. I thought that was a down-home farmer's meal. of eating bacon and eggs. And they invented that in the 1950s to reinvent the American landscape. That was a corporate invention. So I think you do conspire. I think you're trying to oversimplify it. But I think it you know what? Here's the deal. It's irrelevant at this point. It's irrelevant because of the simple fact that we have the situation we have. We might as well teach guys how to get around it.
Oh, okay.
And the media plays a big part, too. Yeah. I mean, the media forms your opinions and stuff, too. I mean, like Oprah, the talk shows, you know, that are very anti-men, and the sitcoms like Home Improvement, where Tim Allen is always bossed around by his wife, and his wife is always right in the end. I mean, all those shows, and Oprah and Ricky Lake, I mean, they all are very anti-male, and that helps form the opinions of real people, too, you know.
Okay, all of that is possible, right?
But yeah,
I really don't know. I can't really comment because I don't do much research with these conspiracies.
Yeah, we're not talking just about conspiracies. We're talking about the engineering of public opinion.
Yeah, but I don't think in this case there was a public opinion that was engineered that it's bad to go abroad and date abroad. You know,
If they were to make it more mainstream, American women might start behaving themselves and start saying, realistically, if my man goes this way, I hope. So they're trying to keep a lid on it. I think that, which is good for me because I don't want all these American idiots going overseas anyway. So I kind of want to hog the women for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I
don't have to worry about that because the U.S. is only 5% of the world. And even if every guy in the U.S. goes overseas, there's still plenty of single women in the other 200 countries, you know.
Yeah. For everyone.
Yeah.
You won't have to worry about.
There are some statistics here in the Philippines that, like, half the women here do not have a male partner. They don't have a boyfriend. They don't have a husband. A good guy is just very, very hard to find here.
Yeah, in the Philippines, every time I talk to a girl or flirt with her or hit on her, most of the time she never says, "Oh, I already have a boyfriend" or something. Whereas in America, virtually 100% of the time I talk to a girl or ask her number, she'll say, "I got a boyfriend." It's like 100% versus almost none. I mean, it's a huge, huge difference. We're not talking about a little difference. We're talking about a big, big difference. I mean, some countries are just different worlds or different dimensions almost. And you just feel better. You just feel different about yourself, too.
Guys, let me make a point here. You guys remember that guy George Soudini, that he was 48 years old. He was going to all those pickup artist seminars. And he had a very good paying job. He was probably making $80,000 a year. He lived in Pennsylvania. So he was making good money even for his region of the country. And he went out and shot a bunch of women because he was so frustrated with the dating scene. And these pickup artists, they have totally... I feel sorry for guys like that because all they would have had to done is listen to Winston Wu talk, and they would have realized that there's a whole world out there. But when you've got Asperger's and you're going to a dating seminar like these pickup artists like David D. Scamgelo or D'Angelo and the Mystery Method and these Carl Zuma, these people are just feeding you nothing. Well, this guy was going to this guy named Ardon Steele. All these guys are just scam artists, and they're the pickup artist community has made a fortune off of these lonely men that can't get a date. What do you guys think about that?
Winston?
Well, I think, I mean, someone explained on my forum that PUA is like a martial art. If you practice it a lot, you'll get better and better, you know. But you can't just be a success overnight. I mean, it could take years. Or it could be never. I mean, it depends on how big the odds are against you. I mean, if you're not a girl's physical type in the U.S., you're pretty much out of it. I mean, most of the time, you're not even in the friend zone. So, but the people that sell PUA definitely exaggerate the claims and of it. But yeah, there's a lot of lonely guys that could benefit from the message of my site and my movement and from what David is saying, but the problem is people like me and David don't get in the mainstream media. We don't get to say what we get to say. I mean, I guess the only popular talk show host that talks about these things is maybe Tom Likas, for example. But mainstream media doesn't.
Tom Likas is like the best guy for this, and he's about the only one. I don't think anybody other than Tom Likas in the mainstream media, and he got censored too. So it goes to show you that there might be a conspiracy to keep this knowledge out there.
Yeah, well, it's not politically correct, you know,
taboo,
in a
yeah.
country. Yeah, it's taboo culturally, and it's also not very nice to tell people to leave the country because, you know, first of all, most people won't like it because people are taught to be patriotic and salute the flag. And I'm just saying, I don't see anything wrong with being a patriot, but also loving other places. It's just like, you know, just like the same thing that I, you know, if a Californian can have a house in New York or, you know, in Montana, you know, does that mean he is not a patriotic New Yorker, that he hates New York? No. But it's okay to do that. It's accepted, but there's just too much patriotism for people to accept that. And if you start writing something like this, people will just get angry, you know, how dare you, how, you know, how dare you go away, are you a loser, is that a cop-out, you know, it's just that it'll create so much controversy that, you know, newspapers don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, and there's also, I mean, there's this assumption that people are the same and that location doesn't make a difference and that every you should get everything from your own location. And, I forgot what I was going to say, but...
Guys, can I tell you something else that I did? I don't tell a lot of people this, but I might as well tell it now. I moved to a small town for about 2 years. I've actually lived in a couple small towns, but I lived in one for about 2 years. And my only purpose of it was to kind of get into more of a community base where people would kind of feel like, you know, you'd belong there and you'd meet a good woman and, you know, meet the local townspeople. But I found out that small towns in America are not always good either, because here's the problem. They're very susceptible to keeping outsiders ostracized, because if you don't have generations going in that town, you kind of are an outsider. And at first they'll talk to you, but then once they kind of get the scoop on you, especially women, you're pretty much on your own. And I lived in this town. I remember the last year I lived there, I was miserable because I'd go out there and I'd see people on the sidewalk in the local town square or downtown area, and it was just, I felt like the redheaded stepchild at a family reunion or something, you know, it's like, or, you know, a bastard at a family reunion, because it's like, even in a small town in America, you cannot socially connect with people because there's the same stigmas of social status, your physical appearance, especially being a guy. I mean, it's just, so it's a no-win situation for men in America. I thought moving to a small town would change that, but that never did it either.
Huh. Yeah, and it's like that in the suburbs too. I mean, most of the women are either taken or they're teenagers, and there's just not really any eligible women around. I mean, a lot of people recommend New York City, but I mean, there are a lot of single women in New York City, but their standards are just so high that few men are going to even qualify there.
Yeah, speaking of, the guy that I've interviewed, his name is Tim. Tim is a guy from New York City, and I've interviewed him several times, or I talked to him on the phone, and he said the same thing. He goes, yeah, it's true that Manhattan is chock full of single women, but their standards are such that they're not going to date an electrician or a plumber when they can date a Wall Street executive or some rich guy who looks like Ricky Martin, only is straight.
Yeah, so... I mean, you got to go where you know, this. I mean, your qualities, I mean, give you the best advantage. For example, I am Asian, and in the U.S., Asian men are considered the least attractive on the totem pole of the men. It'd be Asian men and Arabs and maybe East Indians at the very bottom.
Vincent, I have one exception to the rule about the Asian thing. If you're a first-generation Asian immigrant, the women only date Asian guys. Because when I went to Boston to run the Boston Marathon, I noticed there was a huge Asian population there. There were working-class, blue-collar types. And I asked the cab driver, says, how can these people afford to live here? He says they pool their money. They live in family communes, or, you know, they pool their money together like both Asian cultures do. And you never saw on the subway an Asian girl with a white guy. They were always paired up with another Asian guy.
But yeah. But not only with another Asian guy, you know, like, again, they would just pair with another Korean or another Chinese, you know, Chinese would be with Chinese, Koreans would be with Koreans.
But I think what the problem with Winston is saying that in a state like California where Asians have been there, say, several generations, once a girl's been here two, three generations, her family, she's more apt to want to date a white guy, and that's the dilemma that guys like Winston face, because in the dating scene, there is not a big market for Asian guys, especially English speakers.
Yeah.
Especially Asian guys that only speak English, because if you're an Asian guy off the boat, naturally Asian women are going to be more, the women that you're that came over here with are going to be with you and want to be with you for security or whatever. But it doesn't work that way once the generation has passed. Boom, you're an Asian.
Yeah.
You're an American.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I think the dilemma with Asian guys is not first generation from the country that live in like a city like Boston, but more or less if you've been here a generation or two, and now the Asian girls all want to date blonde hair, blue eyed guys that look like surfer boys or something.
Yeah, but I was just talking about the U.S. culture in general. I mean, it doesn't find Asian guys to be sexually appealing. And most of the white girls will see it that way too. But what I'm just saying is, like, I'm Chinese American, but in the Philippines, for example, the Chinese own a lot of the businesses there. So they're seen as like a business owner class. So they're seen as kind of like an elite class. So when I'm in the Philippines, the class I'm given because of my race is much, much higher. I'm no longer at the bottom. I'm somewhere, you know, above average.
Yeah.
And so I'm treated much, much, much better. And according to David, if I go to Thailand, it's the same thing. The Chinese are given, you know, are seen as high class owner, business owners. They're corporate owners, and so my class has jumped up many levels. I'm just saying, I mean, that would be to my advantage. Then I would have the pick of you know, more attractive girls than in the U.S. And most expats will tell you that overseas they can find a better, more attractive girl than they can back in their home country. Even if they're patriots and they love America, they'll still admit that. I mean, it's just so obvious.
I don't even think really there's anything to be patriotic for anymore, because pretty much the United States is run by corporate conglomerates that are headquartered in other countries. I think that the idea of patriotism is long past. I think guys have to start realizing that finding a nice American, down-home American gal is a thing of the past. Especially if you're approaching 40, it's nothing but a big sausage party out there. And that's all it is. I mean, it is a nightmare. Like Winston said something to me, I think, several weeks ago. You almost go months of, it takes a couple of years just to find somebody, a woman that finds you mildly attractive. And you said a decade, so I guess it's been worse for guys like you, right, David?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the tragedy. I mean, that's why guys hang on to their girlfriends and are desperate. In the U.S., if you lose her or she suddenly just decides to leave, then you could be looking at several years of loneliness and datelessness, you know, where you're all alone for years and have no one to spend time with on Friday and Saturday nights, and then you'll feel like a loser. And as you know, in the U.S., if you go out and you're all alone, and you're a guy, no one will talk to you. And so, I mean, it's hard to meet people. I mean, even if you're Asian, you can't just go out and meet other Asians. I mean, people don't meet that way in the U.S. They meet through their friends or through their school or through, you know, through their university. And if you're not connected to those things, if you're just a single guy that's out there, you can't just walk up to girls in the park and say, hey, what's up, like that, and then get a date that way. Whereas in a lot of countries,
and that was in the Philippines, you know, it was very funny because I went to this small town, a really small town. Well, kind of like a provincial capital. It wasn't like a village or anything. It was a provincial capital, but it probably had maybe less than 20,000 people. It was up north, and I went to this public park. There were all these college students hanging around, most of them girls. And I could just walk up to them and start talking, and they would just light up with smiles that I would walk up and talk to them. And then you could exchange numbers and all this. It was just so natural. This is how people should meet. Of course, you know, you have to be polite. You can't start grabbing them or trying to kiss them. They could call the police. But the thing is, you know, just, you know, being a nice guy there was great. You know, and then you get this good response.
It's funny. It's just like, I just don't understand why that how cultures, people become, say, like, there's a really, there's a few, I've seen several good of these YouTubers out there, but there's one guy, I won't mention his name in this interview, but he's a guy that I just discovered recently on YouTube, and he does some really good videos. He's very introspective, and I just don't think most Americans are introspective enough to see this matrix they're living in. They think it's normal to behave this way, and thus we have the quote, the name, the dating scene. Another thing that drives me nuts is that eHarmony commercial. Now, I don't know if you've seen it, Winston. You don't live in the States, but eHarmony has been just pumping up these corporate sponsored type commercials of how the perfect 40-year-old man found the perfect 40-year-old woman, and they're just they package it like as if it's like a new car, or it's so cheesy, and people buy into this garbage. It's just, why do people go this route when they can go somewhere else?
They're not aware of alternatives.
Well, the media also makes it look like the dating scene in America is very easy, too. I mean, the sitcoms make it look that way. And so a lot of guys think that it is really easy. And if they're not getting dates, then there's something wrong with them. So there's this illusion that anyone should be able to get dates. I had that illusion for many years, too. I thought it's easy to get a date in the U.S. because there's this mythos somehow in the culture that it's very easy to meet girls and get dates and stuff, and if you weren't, then you must be doing something wrong, or you must be dysfunctional or something. So I kept looking for ways to improve myself, you know, and I still got no results. But so a lot of guys are under this illusion that it is easy, and no one likes to admit that they don't have dates or they don't have friends. I mean, everyone will usually just pretend they're having a good time and that they're not lonely, you know. So it's denial, too.
David, I want to ask you this question. Let's say tomorrow I get on a plane. I've got my suitcase packed. I got $2,000, and I'm going to stay there for 3 weeks. What can a guy like Steve expect when he gets to, let's say, Manila, or gets to Angeles City or something?
Well, you know, what can you expect? What are you looking for? Like, are you looking for romance? I mean, what can you expect? You'll still have to probably take some kind of action, you know. What you know, in terms of dating, right? Okay, this is what's going to happen. if you arrive, you know, you'll just take a taxi to your hotel, get a good night's sleep, and then in the morning hit a few department stores, and you'll see all these girls working there, nice ladies, you know, and it's just girls everywhere at the counters. Go and just shop around or pretend you're shopping. Then there are all these sales girls standing around, different, you know, just piles of clothes and hangers with clothes on them. Just talk to them, you know, smile, laugh, you know, joke with them, ask them, then just say, hey, by the way, you know, you know, I'm new in town. Maybe, you know, what do you do on your weekend? You know, do you go anywhere or do you have free time? Maybe you want to go out and have dinner. And here's my number. You know, give me a call, send me a text message. And, you know, and then go to another place like that. You know, then go to restaurants and talk to the girls there. Waitresses, you know, start chatting them up, you know, give them your number, you know, get, you know. And another thing, just I want to tell you, like here in the Philippines, they say that it's a third world country, but the cell phone technology is very advanced. All you do is you just buy a SIM card, pop it in, and then you could call any country in the world, and you could send text messages, whereas in the States, you need to activate it, put in all these weird numbers, and then still, you know, it's hard to send text messages and all that. And then here, you just reload your card anywhere. You know, there are all these shops everywhere. So you just buy a SIM card. The first thing you do, you buy a SIM card, you buy a phone, and you just start walking around. And then, you know, by the end of the day, you know, if you talk to about 10 girls, you'll probably end up with 6 that want to have a date with you, that want to go out, that are sending you text messages. Hey, where are you doing? You know, where are you now? What are you doing? You want to go out? You want to have fun? That's what you could expect here in one day.
And this would be flying solo, knowing nobody. It would be like me going out.
Yeah.
That would.
Yeah, because immediately when you arrive there, you'll notice that the barriers between you and the girls are down. There's no bubble or force field. or ice barrier between you and them, that's the very first thing you'll notice, is that there's no barriers like there is in the Western country. And then without the barriers, you'll be like, whoa, wait a second. This is easy. And then even if you're all by yourself, like I said, because people are so connected in a lot of countries, even when you're alone physically, you don't really feel alone. You still feel connected, like you can meet people.
If I were to arrive in Los Angeles and then just start walking up women or land in Nebraska, I couldn't expect all of a sudden this drastic change in the women. It's not going to be that much different. But if you land in the Philippines, it's the difference between night and day.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't say that it's kind of different in Mexico. Even I went down to Mexico and I went to all those department stores, and I speak Spanish, so I could chat them up. And you could give them your number, and it'd probably happen the same way. The difference is in Mexico, they don't speak English. You need to speak Spanish. But whereas here in the Philippines, it's basically an English-speaking country, and just about everyone speaks pretty good English, so, you know, their education is in English. And still, they're not part of the Anglosphere culturally.
Let me ask a question, David, and Winston, both of you guys. I'll listen to you first, David. How is it that if they speak English, they're not corrupted by American television? How is it that there's this barrier? Because I have this weird feeling that the American language, or the English and American language in and of itself, is responsible for the corruption, but they are still able to isolate themselves from this American anti-male feminized culture?
Well, first of all, okay, they don't speak English at home. It's just like in India. You know, in India, they also speak English, right? But it's only for education and for documents and for, you know, just business correspondence and newspapers. So it's basically kind of like, I don't know, Latin for religion, you know, used for religion. You know, how come, you know, what I'm saying, how come people didn't become like Romans? You know, that's one thing. And in some ways, they have been corrupted. You know how they've been corrupted? To the point where, after having watched all those Hollywood movies, they think American men are the best thing since sliced bread. You know, they see people like Arnold Schwarzenegger. They see people like Bruce Willis. And when you arrive, you are Bruce Willis. And they think they deserve a person like you. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, they've been corrupted, and they would prefer you over a local guy. So from the local guys, I mean, not in all cases, but in a lot of cases. So from the local guys' perspective, they are being corrupted by America, because once, you know, and it happens here in a village, you know, a guy goes courting a girl and she just blows him off all the time, you know, and he courts her and this and that. And then this American man arrives in that village and just whisks the girl away, and the girl just falls for him. Yeah, they've been corrupted, but in your favor. I'm not saying it's a good thing.
In a good way, too, because I don't think that, like, I think, Winston, you were saying something to me that you said you don't like to get too social with other American expats because you feel like a lot of them might not agree, or what's the whole issue here? Like, would you, if you were a white or an American guy like you are now, would you associate, have a group of expat male friends, or would you rather just hang around the locals?
Well, a little bit of both. I don't think I said that. I mean, it depends on the expat. I mean, if we have something in common, if we have conversation chemistry. But I mean, the thing is, a lot of the expats, I mean, most of them, if they live overseas, they're usually above average in intelligence, and they think outside the box. So, if you bash American women, it's not taboo with them, and they can relate.
So you're telling me, if I were, like, I know I asked this earlier, but if I'm in a group with 20 American expat guys, all 20 of them probably are going to agree with everything I say about the dating scene in America. I mean,
I brought this up to a lot of expats in restaurants that I meet. Randomly, and they'll all agree. I mean, they won't bring it up first, you know, but if I bring it up, they'll usually agree. They'll say, oh yeah, the dating scene in the States is terrible, and they'll usually agree, no question.
I gotta get over, you guys, I have got to get over there within the next couple months. I'm going to do it this summer, guys. I'm going to make it happen, and I'm going to do a video on it too. David, now what city are you in?
I'm in Angeles City.
Okay, would you recommend Matt, would you want me to be, like, would you be okay to kind of, like, maybe be kind of my guide there?
Yeah, if I'm still around, you know, if things are still okay, because I fly out all the time and I come back. If I'm around, yeah, sure, why not? But on the other hand, you know, even if I'm not around, I'll guide you electronically, you know, through the internet. I'll tell you what hotels to stay in, where to go. But personally, I'd recommend that you don't come to Angeles City, that you go to Manila or Cebu. Cebu is kind of like the place a lot of guys go to look for girlfriends and wives, because it has a very big female-male imbalance. There are many more girls than guys. And you know,
and they're probably more attractive, too.
Yeah, well, you know, beauty.
Well, Manila, I don't think Manila would be bad, but you're saying that if I go, what's this, the name of the city called again?
What I'm saying is that I could guide you as far as which places in the Philippines are better, which places you should go to. And, you know, even if I'm not around, I'll still be around, you know, as far as being online is concerned. I've had friends that have come over. They were lonely guys, and they found girlfriends and stuff. But you have to be careful here as well, because there are a lot of scammers, a lot of opportunists, a lot of, like, you know, a lot of airheads, you know, girls that are just not, you know, they're not really serious, and they want to take you for the ride. And
yeah, but then
you know,
how
that happens.
I know that if I don't have a person like you with me? You're telling
Well, I'm there. I live in Angeles City too. I mean,
Okay, Winston, why don't we plan it out so that you and I will make a movie of this? We'll make this into a full fledged movie, and we can promote your website because we can prove this to people. Do you want to do this? I'm serious about this. I am dead serious about this, Winston. I am not playing around. I've got the money.
But it depends on where you go. I mean, if you're in the bar area, I don't know if some people don't want a video around. I mean, you might.
They make sure.
But if we're on dates or something, that might be different. They don't mind being taped.
Well, that's not the problem. But you can get like lapel cameras and stuff too. Well, you can do all of that stuff. I mean, there's different things. But here, even if you don't go that route, just to chronicle this, even if it was written in a diary. If you could chronicle it on audio journal, I mean, just the idea of getting this idea across to people of how different this is, because I really don't care to really convince anybody, but it just seems like it's something that I wouldn't want to do it totally alone. I think that I'd like to at least have somebody. I mean, you guys have told me.
I came out alone. I was 30 years old. I came out here alone. I went to Thailand alone. I went to Puerto Rico alone. I went to all these places alone. I've been alone. You know, I read up on those places. You know, I gathered, you know, all the materials that I wanted. And I found, you know, yeah, what I'm saying is that if we're around, if I'm around, I'll show you around as well. But don't be afraid to come out here alone. I'll tell you what hotel to stay in. You know, I'll just guide you through the internet. Why would you be scared? It's not a very dangerous society. It's like
not like walking downtown from New York, is it?
No, it's much less dangerous. It's a nation country still, in spite of everything, you know. So the people are kind of passive. There's very little random violence, you know. Most of the time, you'll be either cheated or, you know, overcharged, or there'll be pickpockets. But the people are, by and large, nonviolent. You know, you do get one or two violent types once in a while when they're drunk. But it's nothing compared to, let's say, walking into, you know, some nasty place on Coney Island, New York, or Detroit, where people are really nasty. You know, people here are mostly really sweet, and
I think
they can show you around. They will show you around.
You know the difference between poor people in this country and poor people in other countries? In like the Philippines, poor people in this country act nasty, where poor people in those countries are happier.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely smile and are very cheerful.
Yeah.
there's a sense of connection with everyone. Yeah. But yeah, it's relatively safe. It, you know, as long as you have common sense and don't hang out in bad areas, and you stay in you know main roads and main streets, and where I live and where David is visiting is a touristy area, so there's other foreigners too, and lots of
If you come out here, there'll be so many guys already here. Yeah, you know, I'll tell you of a place, you know, to go to. You know, just hang out. I could, you know, but that's assuming I'm not going to be around. But if I'm around, you know, then I'll take you around. If not, I'll just tell you where to go, where you can meet guys.
It's pretty much a place you can figure it out on your own.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's very easy.
There's so many websites, and, you know, what I can do is, if you go to Cebu, which is the second largest city, there's a website, and it's called livinginCebu.com, and there's so many American guys on it. And, you know, if you go, you could ask all these questions and stuff. Wow. And, you know, and you could then talk to, you know, you could talk to them and say, no, is there a place where I can hang out and meet other Americans? And you will. It's really no big deal.
You're not going to look, and guys aren't going to be all protective over their girl.
On the contrary, the guys on these websites, you know,
They don't live in scarcity, these American guys. Like, if you go to you know, one of the problems in this country is, like, they have these all for singles, like, events, like join the ski lodge or whatever, and it's always a sausage fest, and it's always a sausage party with predominantly men. So you can imagine if there were a handful of women there, these guys would be, like, real protective.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's enough to go around. I mean, there's
enough to go around. I'm sick of the sausage. The social scene for men is a sausage fest. It really is in this country. I'm tired of living in a sausage farm.
Okay, but what I'm saying, you know, I don't favor abandoning America, like expatriating, you know, like one thing is becoming an expat, but if you know, but wait. The thing is, you know, what I'm saying, you keep America, I mean, you stay American, you keep your allegiance to the country, that's very good, and, you know, you keep your passport, keep your bank accounts. What I'm saying, it's called, my formula is called quilting. You quilt your world, okay, America, for, let's say, real estate investment, maybe not now, but, you know, for getting credit cards, for, you know, keeping some money in the bank, you know, for making money if you're into something else, you know, it becomes your business base, your citizenship base. You know, it's so hard to get a credit card in another country. Like, I went to the States, you know, I got, like within, you know, within, like, a month, I got, like, $35,000 worth of credit. Now, I'm not saying that I'm going to be charging up, you know, and just using all this credit. No, but it's nice to know that you have this cushion that, you know, in case, you know, things go bad, you could always charge on an American credit card.
Yeah, Steve is talking about dating, not about that.
I understand. But, you know what I'm saying, socially, it's nice to build a nice dating scene, a group of friends overseas, Americans and otherwise. In other words, you know, what we need to do is multinationalize ourselves. You know, we just become a human multinational, which was term invented by a guy named Mr. Hill, and he wrote a book called PT, Perpetual Traveler, and it's about a certain lifestyle that you don't really belong to any other country, or to any country, like all countries consider you to be a tourist, a person passing through, and this way you discover freedom, and you have five flags. One country for this, one country for that. You have a playground like the Philippines or somewhere in Eastern Europe where you have all your social contacts, your friends, your girlfriend or girlfriends, and all this. You have another country for this, and you have another country for that. Like, for example, here in the Philippines, you know, sometimes they miss the intellectual stimulation. There are some intelligent people here, but they're very hard to find. I'm not saying not. No, I want to say intellectual.
Yeah, Vincent, you made this point about Asians. You don't think they're very intellectual, which I kind of think you're right. They're more conformist oriented.
Yeah, they are more conformist oriented, and that's even true in the Philippines. I mean, people are generally followers. They follow whatever their friends do. If their friends are all on Yahoo Messenger, they follow that. If they all wear this or have a certain cell phone, they try to follow that too. I mean, yeah, most Asians our followers, not just in not just Chinese and Japanese, but Filipinos are like that too, and so they're not really independent in terms of thinking outside the box or thinking on their own. That's generally true, you know, but there's always expats you can have intelligent conversations with, you know, or even just on the internet. I mean, I still have a lot of intelligent conversations with you know, other friends from all around the world, you know, and that's the beauty of the internet. But yeah, I mean, that's something you'll just have to work out when it comes to it.
Okay, well, listen, you guys have to wrap up this interview. Today's date is June 23rd, 2010. It's a little bit after, about 7 minutes after 5 p.m. I want to thank you, David. You're in the Philippines, Angeles City, and this I'm talking with Winston Wu, who's of happierabroad.com. It's all one word, happierabroad.com. If you want to find out more about dating overseas, you can find out at your site. Is that correct, Winston?
Yeah, and David actually gives advice on my forum. So if you want to ask him any questions or even post a question for either of us on the Happier Abroad forum. And I hope you come soon, Steve, and so we can show you all these
soon.
Things.
In fact, I will get in touch with you guys. I'll email you to – I'm going to be closing this interview out, but I will be getting in touch with you guys within the next day or two by email or whatever, Skype.
That's totally transform your life. I mean
– yes. Yes, you guys have gotten me so excited about it. This interview has transformed my life. I mean, just thank you. By the way, Winston, I want to say one thing. Thank you for introducing me to David. You really have put the nail in the coffin with this issue. You told me about him, and I didn't believe that this guy was so knowledgeable. And thank you, David, too.
You're very welcome.
My pleasure. Winston, maybe you could tell him about the website with that is called Expatriate Observations. What's that? Expatriate. What's the?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that you guys could read up on some of my adventures. You know, certain things that I've experienced overseas. So before you go there, what's the name of that website, Winston? Can you give him the URL?
Yeah, it's a blog that I put a lot of David's wisdom and experience and advice and observations, and it's really, really good and deep. And
what's the URL again?
Winston, you keep coming out low. I thought it was my system. I'm glad he said that. Your voice comes in low. Repeat that again.
Okay, the URL is expatriateobservations.blogspot.com.
Expatriateobservations.com. I'm repeating that so I keep anybody.
Yeah,
that's expatriates or patriots observations plural.
Yeah, that's expatriate and then observations.blogspot.com. You can go to my site and it's, you can, if you go to my homepage, it's linked from there. You'll see a link at the top that says expat lessons.
Wow. Yeah,
see it in the menu. And then if you click that, it'll go right to Expatriate Observations, to David's blog, which has a ton of advice and wisdom and observations.
You guys are paving a renaissance for men in this country. Just this information is worth its weight in gold.
But it's been going on already. We're not really paving anything. We're maybe expanding it. I mean, American guys have been doing it for like ages.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about centuries they've been doing that.
Except yeah, they just don't go public with it.
There was no internet. They don't go public with that. You know, right now there are from 6 to 7 million Americans living overseas.
Yes.
You know, when you start saying things like, you know, how come all the Mexicans are coming here and we're not going to their countries? Well, we are. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it's an exchange of population right now. And people travel around.
Thing with the illegal immigration thing too, from the dating standpoint, it doesn't benefit men either, because most of them are men that come over here. And so in reality, either way we look at it, as Americans, there's no glimmer of hope as a man. Like a bunch of immigrants coming into this country isn't going to change the fact that most immigrants are men usually that come in first. So anyways, I will get in touch with you guys, and thank you very much for this interview.
Sure, my pleasure.
Thanks, Steve.
And see you later. Thanks.